This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Good morning. Good to see you all back again to wrap up the week. So today, after hearing so many ideas, an overwhelming amount of ideas, we're going to talk about managing the demands. If you would even try to use 10% of the ideas that you have heard this week, you would be overwhelmed, wouldn't you? I walked in yesterday when Sharon was talking, and I could have felt like a failure of a teacher in 30 seconds. I don't do that, and I don't do that. I don't know that I do anything that she suggested to do. And I'm impressed with that always in school meetings. All the ideas. And need to face the reality, and the simple truth, that you just cannot do everything. I'm suspicious. Not suspicious. I know that if you would come and visit my classroom, and some of you have, only a few, you would be disappointed. So please don't come and visit. Here's why. When you come to a place like this, and I just really want to say this and make sure I'm saying this clearly. Presenters are speaking out of their strength in a particular subject. And so when you hear a class on how to teach history and make it come alive, that they're in their element, as we say sometimes. And they kind of specialize in that. And then you go to another class on science demonstrations. Well, they're in their element. And they are speaking out of experience and kind of specializing. And then you hear somebody talking about phonics and math and all the charts and endless ideas. They are speaking out of their thing that they like to do and have developed well. That is not to minimize the importance of the idea that they're giving, but it's to try to think realistically. That's one reason. The second reason is they are speaking the ideal. And I'm suspicious sometimes they say they don't, you know, always get all of this done. So they're holding forth the ideal in their element. And for those reasons, I am sure there's not a single presenter who would say, if you go from class to class and you gather all these ideas, you know, they've been able to do all of these things. It is impossible in terms of even time constraints. And certainly impossible in terms of your personal energy and ability to do all these things. Again, it's not to minimize taking ideas, implementing them. I just am burdened that you don't leave burned out before day one. Now, I am not saying anything unkind whatsoever about teachers who burn out after 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. Teachers sometimes need a break. Sometimes teaching is not for a particular person. I understand and am very kind about that. But I think some of the things we want to talk about today, I'm hoping that they are helpful in this issue of just wearing out and burning out because the demands are just there every day. Well, they are there every day. What can we do to manage them that it doesn't destroy us and we can sustain our careers if that's what God calls us to do? If you do not take time for your wellness, you will be forced to take time for your illness. Maybe some of you have already needed to take this time. Of course, we get sick sometimes. That's not the point of this saying, that if you get sick, you didn't take care of yourself. But you understand the point. You must take care of yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And we'll look at some of those divisions as we move along. just have a few main points, a few things under each one. Understanding and dealing with your limitations. You know, words are always tricky, and how you interpret what I write down, so that's why I will try to explain it. But it sort of hits me as, this is two things to think about here. Excellence versus self-indulgent perfectionism. Now, some teachers are perfectionists, and I am in no way mocking that or knocking that. But let's think a little bit about this perfectionism. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands because it probably looks good to raise your hand that you're a perfectionist. You know, it's kind of a good reputation to have. But there's some connections between burning out and self-indulgent perfectionism or self-serving perfectionism. Can you see the difference between striving to be an excellent teacher versus a self-indulgent perfectionist? Because what is motivating perfectionism? You'll say, that's my personality. And it's okay. Okay, so it's okay to a degree to be a perfectionist. But let's just try to back away a little bit and say, what's really driving this? Is some of this competition with other teachers? Is some of this personal insecurity? And if I can just do it just right, I'll feel better about myself. See, it's about myself. I would like to suggest that excellence focuses on the student and being the best teacher you should be for your student. The perfectionism is maybe a more of a focus on who am I and who do I think I am and who do I want to project myself to be in the eyes of the students and community. So again, it can be pretty selfish. I hope every student, every teacher recognizes the tendency to be a selfish teacher in so many ways. And I think this is one way. You can self-destruct if you don't handle your tendencies to be a perfectionist. It's not saying you shouldn't acknowledge that and be that to a degree, but how that plays out really does matter. And maybe even makes a difference how long you'll be a teacher. It's this little picture. This girl looks to me a little worried as she's doing what most people would do very simply, and the job would be well done, but she's stressing out. Be honest with your motives. Alluded to that already. As you feel driven to do things this year, why am I doing it? Again, I think it kind of falls in this idea of excellence. This helps me to be truly a better teacher. It helps me to teach well and get my job done versus I will feel better about myself if I do this. Again, kind of down the perfectionism line. And maybe this doesn't make a lot of sense to you, but in my mind, to kind of create these categories of motives helps me to decide then, well, is this worth the time and energy, or is this maybe not worth the time and energy? We'll look at a few more specifics here, of course. Now, this might be misunderstood. Bring your personal best to your students. And here's, I wasn't sure how else to word it, so I'm going to try to explain it. I would encourage you to think about, what is it going to take for you to bring your personal best? I mean, in a holistic way. I mean, yourself to your students, that you can enjoy your students and your students can enjoy you. You can put your best foot forward. And if you don't handle the demands properly, yes, you got that amazing list of things done the day before, but you are in no physical or emotional or even spiritual position to face the next day and enjoy the fruit of all that work the night before. You understand what I mean by the personal best? I don't know, I wasn't, just didn't know how else to word it. That you take responsibility that you can physically and emotionally be present in the classroom and enjoy your students and allow them to enjoy you. And if you mismanage the demands, You got a lot of things done. You checked all those things. But when you step into the classroom, you're just not in a good position to meet the demands of the day then, emotionally and physically. So I would urge you to think about this. Am I being controlled by the demands to the point that by the time I get to the class and the children come in, the sense of joy is gone? Teachers need to be joyful teachers. And I know there's personality differences here, but they need to smile a lot. They need to be friendly and gracious and compassionate and win the hearts of the students. And that's not always by that tremendous checklist of things that we want to get done. And then we don't have what it takes to handle the demands of the day. Like we say sometimes, there's an awful lot of ditch and very little road. So I can be misunderstood so easily here. Hopefully you can flesh this out in your own experience. All right. Ask, what happens if I don't get this done? This is maybe a way to think through now, more specifically the demands and sorting this thing out a little bit. If you would write down, and I would encourage you to do this, write down the things that you need to get done in the next 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever you have between now and school. All the things that you think you need to do and all the things you would like to do. And ask yourself, what happens if I don't get this done? So, I have all this theme to figure out and get done. Now listen, teachers, some of you, this is energizing. It's okay. Go for it. Some of you, though, this is not energizing. And this is a burden. But it's the first question that almost everybody asks me at Teachers Week. This would particularly be the ladies, I would assume, but the men as well. What's your theme? I was thinking about this, the three kinds of teachers we talked about. You kind of know by the three questions they might ask first. What do you enjoy teaching the most? Or, so, you enjoy your students, I'm sure? Or, hey, what's your theme this year? You know, it's kind of the questions we ask, it kind of reveals what's on our hearts. What style of a teacher am I? There's things like that that are okay and fine, but not everybody has to do this. What happens if I don't get this done? Well, I'm going to be humiliated. That's all right. It's going to happen plenty of times, I assure you. I'm not going to have what other teachers do. Of course we want a sense of accomplishment and care about our rooms, but ask the question, what happens if I don't get this done? What's going to matter in a year or two in the life of the student educationally? So what happens if I don't get some of those really neat charts done that I saw at Faith Builders or from another teacher? And I don't get them just hung up nicely and done. This is more now toward education, right? I mean, it's showing how things work, and nouns and verbs. And what happens if I don't get it done? Well, it feels maybe a little more consequence. A little more. What happens if I don't get a syllabus done in science? Or I hardly get the science lesson taught, and I'm sort of down to reading it to my students and moving on. And I taught a number of years, and I remember walking up front day after day with 5 math books. And so 5th grade, 6th grade, and then the next day I would go 6th grade, 7th, back to 5. I'd change it every day so that not everybody was, you know, wasn't always 5th grade's first, 10th grade's last. And then 5 English books and 3 English books. So what happens if I just don't have time to teach that class? It matters. How much does it matter? I'm not going to try to answer that question exactly. It's like, whoa, you mean I wouldn't teach it? I didn't say that. I'm asking questions. You need to give the answers. But as we move toward what happens if I don't teach and quite have a grasp on math, what happens? The consequences are greater, aren't they? Next year, remember, it's not about you, it's about the student. This matters now if I don't get this done. I didn't have time to study the lesson because I was, you know, decorating the room. Well, this is going to matter. It's going to matter even in the year as they stumble and fumble because you didn't lay a foundation of lesson after lesson after lesson. I really don't like English that well, so I'm not really studying that very well. And we read the lesson, and I'd say, you know, can you all figure this out? And good job, you know, and we just kind of move along. There's consequences to this. See, if we ask, what happens if I don't get this done? It helps us to categorize what is the most important, not what I feel like doing the most necessarily. In fact, unfortunately, this is in conflict, isn't it? But it's not about me. It's not about my perfectionism. It's not about image. It's about getting the job done of teaching. So if we ask this question and we move what really matters to the top of the list to make sure we get those things done. And I would just stress things like reading in the lower grades, math and English as you move into middle grades, reading comprehension. Folks, that is the gut of teaching in terms of academics. I love science. It's my favorite subject. But unfortunately, in some ways, you have a little more flex. Oh, wonderful if you can teach it well. But you have a little more grace in developing that subject than you have grace in developing your ability to understand English. You don't have 5 years to figure out nouns and verbs and how to diagram. You don't have 5 years to figure out how to show students in adding fractions and making like fractions. You don't have 5 years to figure that out. You just don't. There's consequences to those failures. Get some help. Figure it out. Maybe even stay up late sometimes until you have it mastered. So allow other people in your school, experienced teachers, administrators. You're overwhelmed with all these classes, all this information. I'm a new teacher. I'm out of school 4 or 5 years. I didn't enjoy school that much. I heard people saying that. It's okay. But get some help in figuring out what is the irreducible minimum. I heard another teacher use that here. I think it was maybe Stephen Brubaker. Irreducible minimum. This is what I must get done to be a successful teacher. This has a lot of flex. But I find this help, and I think other teachers in talking here have said some of the same things. Set some time limits. Look, I want to do this bulletin board, and I'm going to really try to get this done in 1 hour, or 2 hours, or whatever it is. It brings some discipline into staying focused. In a broader way, maybe time limits as to how much time you're going to spend at school. Folks, you cannot afford to live and breathe school 24/7. Oh, I just love school. It's my life. Well, good, but you want longevity of life as well, right? And so if you're going to survive, I've found, yes, you can maybe do that a year, and a single person can obviously put more energy in than an older person or married person or other responsibilities, but I don't think you need to feel guilty saying, look, you know, I don't come before 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that's just when I come to school. I don't go for it. Of course not. I try to get to school 7-ish, and I work till 5:30 or 6 o'clock, but I try to set limits. I have 7 children, so I got some edges here. Oh, report card time, of course I work more. Sometimes I do work Saturdays. Once in a while I do work in the evening on a special project, but I try to kind of course, not in my first year, in my first couple years, I did work a lot in the evenings, but I didn't have a large family. So, wow, what am I saying? Well, I hope you can figure it out. I mean, new teachers, I understand there are some things I said you got to get done. But think about creating some edges. Sometimes when I begin and I try to stop, I have so much time, and then I'm just going to have to call it good enough. Because you need to survive these demands. Again, pretty much flex here. But think about ways where you can do this, and of course there's going to be times and ways in which you cannot do this. Look for and develop time savers. Well, teachers are always looking for time savers, right? One time saver is to put your phone in an appropriate place, and it certainly is not right in front of you. I'd imagine some of you waste a lot of time on your phone after school. I hope you don't during school. I'll tell you, folks, your students will see that. I've heard students say this about their teachers. Teachers on the phone and grinning in the middle of the day and looking at things. And even saw one teacher with a drawer open and the phone was in there, and I happened to catch him walking by his room. He's grinning in the drawer. I assume his phone was in there. I don't know what else would have been so funny. Boy, students see that. And then you look up and say, why aren't you busy? I was watching you. You just can't do that. You can't get away with that. Teachers, you must be disciplined yourself if you expect that out of your students. I find little things like even, of course, in teaching one or two grades, I would have a stack of maybe 10, 12, 15 or more tests. Well, I find it helpful to grade the first page. And after a while, it's half memorized. Just grade the first one. Then I flip and I do the second, the third. That's way faster to me than the first page. So I see people nodding their heads. Little time savers like that that really do make a difference. And I have a question that I want you to be very careful with and not take out of context. One question I have, and this varies from school to school. If you, from what I would understand now, if you're a CLE school, the focus is on the tests. And I have nothing to say against that whatsoever. So again, we have such a variety here. Other schools, though, they're churning out 4, 5, or 6 papers per student, and you're expected to correct those papers. Now, as you move into the middle and upper grades, the students can do some of that. I do a lot of that when it's simple grading, but I still always collect their papers rather than asking for the grades up front. You can debate that later. I do not take grades up front for, I think, reasons you can probably understand. If you do and it works for you, that's fine. But we've done a little bit of checking on this, where we've taken a grade book that had 30, 40 grades per person, per subject, row after row after row. Well, in our school, and again, your schools do this differently, but in the middle and upper grades, the tests are worth 75%. And the homework is worth 25%. And the parents know this. They can help their students and don't need to call me and say, my child, I don't think really has it. And I helped them with problem after problem. It's going to skew their final grade on their report card. No, it probably won't, because it's only worth 25% of the report card grade. So it does give us some flex here that maybe your system doesn't. I want to say that not because it's the best way to do it, but because I need to be fair with different schools do this differently. So back to what I was saying. We've taken all these grades, and we've knocked at least 30% of the grades out and redid the calculation. How much do you think that made a difference on the final report card grade at the end of the marking period? Rarely did it make 1% different. If it made 1% difference once or twice, and you have 4 or 6 marking periods, how much do you think that makes a difference at the end of the year? Probably not 1%, but certainly not more than 1. And that's just by going indiscriminately, of course. Not looking for all the bad grades and striking them out. Just saying, I'm going to go every 3 days and knock it out. So just 3. Time saver. Folks, we can only do so much. So this is a matter of deciding where to put the energies. Do I really want to be putting my energies by the hour correcting those papers, meticulously making sure I didn't make a mistake, and I'll just drop this one little thing? I never write how many wrong they have at the top of the paper. Never. Because they will count them and then come back and harass you. I just give them a grade, it was a 90. Oh, it should have been an 89 or a 90. So I just don't write how many. I count them up. Maybe that seems sloppy to you, but it's my time saver. And they never come back and say, oh, you missed one. Then they feel guilty if they don't tell you. Well, we make mistakes. It's off a wee bit. Does it matter? Again, it's what matters, what doesn't. But rather than spending hours after school or even an hour or two just going over this paper, neatly writing all this in, creating all this work either to enter it in your computer or calculate it at the end of the year, whatever system you use. And then I got a half an hour now to get ready for tomorrow. So we get our books out. Oh, wow, I should have got a little demonstration for that, and oh boy, I don't quite understand this. How am I going to, I'm running out of time, I have church this evening. It's, where am I putting my time? How am I handling the demands? Again, I'm not calling for sloppiness. I'm saying, where can we cut and not hurt the integrity of the grading system? Talk to your school board about it. Talk to your head teachers. What do they do? But I've repeatedly encouraged teachers to just get this trimmed down. And my students know that I do not grade every paper. I grade most. I have a hard time getting it down to 2/3 out of grade, 1/3 I don't. I'm not there, but sometimes I wonder why I'm not. Sometimes I'll just say, okay, at the top. Sometimes I'll say, today I graded that for neatness. A plus, B, great, needs improvement. That was your grade. That has value, doesn't it? Or simply a completion grade. Now, don't do this often because most people are going to get 100% if it's a completion grade, and that skews the grades pretty quickly. But once a month, you can do that. You're under pressure. You need extra time to study. Again, I'd love to hear some response to this. I have no idea what you're thinking, but maybe you can talk about it later, ask me questions. Work within your system. If the administration says, no, every paper gets graded and is calculated, well, then accept that. Maybe there'll be time down the road to talk about that. Keep a to-do list. This is for my emotional well-being. Some of you, I'm sure, can keep a tremendous amount of things you need to do. But don't you find, at least most of you, if you just try to keep that in your head, you're endlessly running through it and afraid you're going to forget something. Sticky notes. Oh, I'm so glad I'm teaching after sticky notes were invented. I mean, one here, one there, five here. And I also often carry with me a clipboard and a tablet. And I just write down what I need to do, phone calls I need to make, information, and then I cross them off. And I think some of you probably do the same thing I do. Sometimes I forget to write it down, and I did it already. So I write it down and then cross it off. Feels good because it just looks so neat. Crossed off. You know, what a feeling of accomplishment. But I would encourage you, especially if you're a little more of the undisciplined kind of person and forget a lot of things and a little, you know, one of those teachers like I certainly am. My wife has encouraged me, write it down. And I've been so helped by just keeping that clipboard, write things down. I need to call this person this evening. It just gets it off your mind and keeps you focused on what you need to do and be efficient because, hey, I'm writing things down as I need to rather than trying to hold all of this in my head. Specifically, postpone some good ideas. All right. This is very applicable right now. Now, I have not done this in a fancy way, but I'm going to say what I think I should do here. All right? I would encourage you to spend some time across the next weeks as you look through your notes, maybe pictures you took, drawings you wrote down, ideas you have. Decide what you can do and what you can't do right now and specifically postpone it. I'm not even going to try to do that this year. Or I'm not going to even try to do it right now. See, what I've tended to do sometimes is I have too many ideas in my head that I would like to do and should do, but I don't get them done. And so I live in a certain amount of frustration that I'm not getting them done, and maybe even a little bit of guilt. Oh, that's right, I wanted to do that. That would have been such a neat thing to do. I didn't get it done today. Well, maybe I can do it tomorrow. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Just kind of ideas floating, things that you want to do. Well, again, you cannot do it all. This is a great idea, but you know what? I'm not going to even try to do this till Christmas. I'll review it later. Put it in your grade book, the idea coming up later, or have a list of possible things to do. You know what? This year is my first year. Obviously, I can't implement all those ideas as much as I would love to, but that has to wait. And just move them off so that your mind's at peace. You dealt with the fact you cannot do it, but you didn't just relegate it to the trash can. You're saying, later, I maybe can actually do this, but not now, and work through the fact that I simply can't do this. Finding spiritual, emotional, and physical rejuvenation. This note is on your outline. Just a couple quick things. Everybody take a deep breath, please. Just exhale. 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 See, isn't that what we do as teachers? We just exhale and exhale and exhale. We must inhale. We must become rejuvenated teachers, we give so much. And in most ways, we find that giving actually energizing in and of itself. Years ago, I used to go to a Bible study that our church runs, and I found that rejuvenating. Other teachers didn't. I mean, I'll admit, I loved being up front with 120, 130 wild children from town. And I just trying to control that and manage that. Maybe it was my ego. I don't know. Probably was. But I just found that energizing as a whole. And it's just like, wow, what fun. Well, another teacher might say, oh, got to be kidding. I'm not going there. It stresses me out, or I'm tired. Different people enjoy different things. But do something. It might even be work or a ministry, but you find it rejuvenating. And there's aspects of school that you find rejuvenating. Others are very wearing. We just give and give. So go to church. All right? I don't like to go to church Wednesday night if you, whatever your situation is, and none of the school teachers came. Oh, we're all too tired. Well, of course we skip sometimes. I guess so. You know, once in a great while there were report cards or something had to get done. But don't start just saying, well, you know, I'm too busy. This is the spiritual rejuvenation that you need. Read your Bible. Spend time praying. You must, or you will burn out spiritually. You cannot afford to do that. Stay connected to family and friends. Yes, your social life might shift, but I would really encourage you, keep your friendships. Be with your family. Again, you're in different situations. Maybe you're teaching away from home and you're living with a family you don't know well and you feel better just staying in the basement or in your quarters because you don't want to interrupt their family life. Of course, be sensitive. So this is just a broad general statement. Stay connected to your family and friends. That will rejuvenate you emotionally. Enjoy your hobbies. Maybe less hobbies. Maybe the more expensive hobbies ought to go. School teachers. But enjoy your hobbies. I walk outside certainly more than once a day. Do it in the morning. I do it in the evenings before supper, after supper. We have a lot of plants around the house, lots of hostas, many different varieties, and I just find that rejuvenating to walk out, pull some weeds in the strawberries or the raspberries, look at my plants, endlessly moving plants from one spot to the next, hoeing a little bit. That's not work to me. I find that rejuvenating. It's my hobby. I have many other hobbies. I collect insects. I have quite a large collection. I go to other schools with my insects. I have over 1,000 different kinds of insects and large displays. It's rejuvenating. And my son loves it. We go out together with a net, lots, right now over summer, and we're catching butterflies and mounting them and teaching him how to do it. It's rejuvenating for me. So whatever your hobby is, probably none of you have any hobby quite that strange, but whatever it is, again, you might have to cut them, adjust them, but don't just say, well, I can't do that because I'm a school teacher and I don't have time. Well, inhale. Inhale. Well, this has somewhat to do with time limits. Get your rest. I find if I don't get my rest, I just cannot cope with the stress of school. I get a headache. I get grouchy, probably. I don't know, but I'm sure I do. You have to get your rest. Oh, of course there's times you don't. But as a general statement, again, I'm coming back to the idea, you must bring your best. That's one of the hardest things of teaching school, is that best foot forward every day. Got it? That's why teachers quit sometimes. They're just tired of every morning, no matter how they're feeling, to be the same person pretty much every day in front of their students. They're cheerful, they have a positive attitude, they feel good, and they look good day after day. Get your rest is at least one part of it. Compartmentalize, somewhat related here. Now, I talked about compartmentalizing the other way. Now, I'm going to shift this. I talked about the fact that we have an outside life, and sometimes it's extremely difficult. And to somehow try to compartmentalize. That's emotional stress, disappointments, frustrations that are outside of school. I still need to step with my best foot forward into the classroom. By God's grace, the best I can. It goes the other way. Some of us drag school with us out the door. Instead of having problems bringing our life in the door, we're taking school out the door. Guess what? every caring, loving teacher will do some of this. I have stayed awake at night many times praying for my students. You're going to, of course, or worrying about my students or worrying about me in relation to my students. It's too often, unfortunately, that way, right? Why don't they like me? What's going on here? And it's selfish if I'm not careful. But compartmentalize where you can and as you can. Look, that stress got to stay at school. I have to go home and just enjoy life. And I can overly drag it with me, and I'm burdened down, and I'm sitting around the table, but my mind's elsewhere. What are you thinking about? Oh, I'm bothered about this at school. I'm bothered about that. So I think this, within reason, this compartmentalize is something for you to think about. Last of all, becoming an effective teacher, I just go back to what I've said now many, many times. A lifelong pursuit, and I don't have a lot to say other than that's the summary of what we've been talking about. Please, again, I hope I'm not overly begging you, but do not leave this place demoralized, discouraged, already sure that this is your first and last year of teaching, wishing you could call the school board tonight and say, I'm not going to do this. I can't. I was just at Faith Builders, and I have 1,350,000 things to do, and I just can't do all of these things. Please don't be discouraged. Listen, I told you already, and I'm honestly and humbly saying that I can easily be discouraged. I go to Howard Bean's class on this, and then I sit on Steve Brubaker's and Sharon Young, and on the list goes, and wow, remember, those are two things. I don't have time to do it, and there is not time to do it in the classroom either to do all those things. Take the things you can do, figure out what's the most important thing to do, and then add as you can. God bless you as you work hard this year, and I trust we will see you all back 2020. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.